Adam. Think nothing of it. We reach the end of the path, and Arthur takes a key out of his pocket and unlocks the wrought iron gate. It occurs to me where we are going. I've seen footage once on a documentary about Queen Cecily. We're going to her gravesite. He opens the gate and steps aside for me to walk through. You're probably wondering where we're going. I think I know. As we press on, we find ourselves in a clearing surrounded by tall trees, with the gaps filled in by thick shrubs that are just about to leaf out. In the distance, there is a pond with a small wooden bridge leading to his mother's final resting place. This is where I go on Sunday mornings. The more pressing business you need to attend to. You take in every word I say, don't you? He gives a slight chuckle. This is one of very few places where I can be truly alone with my thoughts, without having to carefully gauge my next reaction. Is that what it's like to be you? A long string of careful reactions? Not always, but a lot of the time. But isn't it like that for everyone? There are societal expectations for all people in each situation. I suppose that's true, but I think there are more rules for you than for most people. We cross the arched bridge, and when we reach the top, a large ornate gravestone comes into view. It is surrounded by hundreds, if not thousands, of white lilies that have bloomed now that spring has arrived. More people watching and waiting for me to make mistakes, anyway. Like me. And many others. Each one with a different reason to hate me, or in the very least, want to see me mess up. Or see you succeed. You've got plenty of those, too. True. We stop and sit on a bench a few feet back from the Queen's grave. Silence overtakes us. The stone reads, Cecily Rose, beloved mother, wife, daughter, sister, and queen. A lump forms in my throat. Arthur was 5 when she died. Arabella was only 3 months old. I sniff, then realize that my vision has become blurred by unexpected tears for someone I never knew. Are you all right? His voice is gentle. Oh, I forgot I'm not supposed to ask you anything personal. It's okay. My voice is unsteady, and I feel silly being the one getting emotional. What if we say that while we're here, in this place, we can alter our agreement, just for a few minutes? Go off the record, you mean? He asks. Yes. Let's just be 2 people talking, not a prince or a critic. Just for now. Right up until we walk through that gate. He smiles, and this time it's different. It's not the smooth womanizer I see. It's just Arthur, a son who lost his mother when he was only a small boy. I'd like that very much, Tessa. Me too. And it's true. I would. I look back at his mother's gravestone. I was just thinking of all that she missed out on. I'm sure she would have given anything to see you and your sister grow up. He makes a strangled sound, and when I turn to him, the expression on his face is one of bitterness. If only that were true. His voice is barely audible. Before I have a chance to even try to figure out what that means, he asks, Do you want to have children? I mean, someday, when you've found the right fellow. I don't know, really. I have 7 nephews and nieces, soon to be 8. I love them to bits most of the time. But the whole parenting thing seems awfully hard to do well. I have a feeling I'd mess it all up. You wouldn't. How do you know that? because you're strong enough to come live among the enemy, smart enough to make a name for yourself, and kind enough to feel sad for someone who lost his mother a very long time ago. The way he says it is so confident that I almost think he might be right about me. He goes on. So there you have it. Solid proof that you wouldn't mess up a child. At least not too badly. I chuckle, then say, I don't know about that, but I do know that the thought of loving someone as much as a parent loves a child terrifies me. They're so fragile, and they need you for everything, absolutely everything, for so long. I sigh under the weight of that question. What about you? I know you're supposed to have children, but do you want them? Very much. But I also know what type of life they'd have in store for them. And to be honest, I don't know that I can do that to a child. His gaze falls on the trees in the distance. You've seen how busy I've been these past 2 weeks. It's nothing compared to what will be expected of me as king. It could be a very long time before I take over. But even now, my life is not my own. In many respects, I'll be set up to fail as a father. But surely you could do things differently. You'd have the power to say no to certain events so you could be with your children. Somewhat. But the thing is, in a way, the entire nation is mine to care for and to protect in the way I would my own child. I've never thought of it that way. Is that how you see it? Yes, actually. As foolish as that may sound to you. He glances down at me for a second, and our eyes meet. The connection between us is immediate. It's like we're peering into each other's souls. But instead of wanting to run and hide, I want to see more. It doesn't sound foolish at all. It sounds sweet. And bloody terrifying. He turns again to the trees. Because you'd be worried about messing up the whole thing on a much grander scale. Exactly. This is going to sound very odd coming from me, but I don't think he would mess it up. I think he'd be very good at it. You're right, that does sound odd. To no one more than me. I smile a little, then explain myself. I think he'd be a fine king, if we needed one. He looks down at me and I can see there's an argument forming on the tip of his tongue, but he stops himself. We're just two people talking. Right. I almost forgot. I retract that last statement, I say. What I meant to say is that over the past 2 weeks, I can see how much you care about your people. I've noticed the way you make each person feel like they are the only person in the room when you're talking to them. And I don't know if they gave you lessons on how to do that in Prince Charm School or what, but I do know that you make people feel special, and that is a gift that most people don't have. Thank you, Tessa. That might be the nicest thing anyone's ever said to me. I doubt that. Maybe not, but it means so much more because it's coming from you. His gaze pierces me, causing me to feel a little weak. There's something I need to know. Sure, what is it? His voice is gentle. Why do you hate us so much? I freeze up. Oh, God. This is going to sound so cold to you, because now that I know you, it sounds very cold to me. Knowing the reason would be infinitely better than having to guess. I wince, take a deep breath, and start to talk. I don't know if you know much about blogging, but it's a surprisingly hard way to make a living. There are literally millions of people blogging every day about every single topic under the sun. Chances that you'll be able to pay your bills are slim to none. So when I was starting out, I was desperate to find ways to separate myself from the pack. I sigh and feel my heart speed up. I'm not sure if you can imagine what it's like to be basically broke, but it's really rather stressful. I came very close to having to sell everything and move back home with my parents. I pause for a second, feeling stripped naked, telling a prince what it's like to be poor. What I really wanted to do, and still do, is to find a way back to mainstream media. I thought if I wrote about national politics, it would help me get there. But I needed a fresh angle, something that would get noticed. I spent weeks researching, trying to find a gap in what was already being reported. Then one day I realized that on a lot of sites, people commented on their dissatisfaction with the monarchy and with our system of government, but I couldn't find a place where all of those like-minded people could come together to share their opinions. "So you found a gap?" Nodding, I say. "I found it and filled it." I stare at Arthur and am surprised to see that he doesn't look upset or hurt or disgusted. He just looks like he understands, which is hard to fathom considering what we're discussing. I go on, wanting to get it all off my chest. I do believe in having elected leaders, and I always will. But I found that the more outrageous my posts, the more traffic I would get on the site, from both sides of the argument. I know this is going to sound cliché, but it really wasn't anything personal. I was just trying to make some money and make a name for myself. "I see. So you were just doing business." I groan and cover my face with my hands for a second. "Somehow, I never thought that any of you would ever read any of it. I thought of it as a space for the regular folk to come to complain and ask questions and challenge the system. But surely you must have at least considered the possibility that we'd read some of it, as you grew more popular?" I had fleeting thoughts, but I always managed to justify it in my mind, telling myself that if any of you did read it, someone like you wouldn't care what someone like me had to say anyhow. Arthur nods. "You're not alone in that, Tessa. I think a lot of people see us as incapable of having feelings. My sister said that maybe to you, we're like two-dimensional bad guys from a Bond movie." As much as I hate to admit it, I suppose that's true. My stomach twists with guilt. I don't know if this will mean anything, but now that I know you, I can see that it was all very unfair, and I wouldn't blame you if you just lost a great deal of respect for me.
"Why would I do that?"
"Because if I had some very noble reasons for becoming the royal watchdog, it would be one thing. But for it to simply be about money? That's savvy." "Savvy? Yes. You saw a business opportunity and you took it. I don't particularly like that you did it, but it's somehow better to know it was just about the money than had it been something more personal." I stare at him for a minute, shocked that he could be so forgiving about the whole thing.
"You're a lot more generous than I thought you'd be."
"Thank you. I'm more generous than I thought I'd be, too." He grins. He glances down at my mouth, and I find myself desperately wanting him to kiss me. Oh dear, this is getting complicated again. I need to put the brakes on whatever this moment is. I turn to face forward again.
"Tell me about your mum."
He's quiet for a moment before he speaks.
"I don't remember much, really. I can tell you what I know from watching film footage of her by the hour, but my actual memories of her are those of a 5-year-old. Fuzzy and incomplete." I can't even imagine what you went through.
Neither can I, really. It's like it's all some horrible dream, something that happened to someone else.
His focus is on her gravestone, and it's unbreakable.
I'm sure.
I wish I hadn't asked, because now I want to hold him tightly to me, and there's no way I can do that, no matter how badly I want to.
She never should have married my father.
He starts talking, and I'm not sure he even knows I'm here.
She wasn't cut out for this life, for life with him. There's a necessary grit that she didn't have. It killed her in the end.
The official report suggested that she died of a suddenly ruptured aneurysm. But I think that he may have just revealed a horrible dark secret that he's been holding on to since he was a young boy. I sit next to him in shock as the pieces start to fall into place. His overprotectiveness about Arabella and his grandmother. He's so careful to make his sister's life as easy as possible, so she won't end up buried next to her mother. He suddenly snaps out of it and looks down at me, a bit of panic behind his eyes.
I apologize, I'm being dramatic.
No, you weren't. My gaze hardens, but I can see he's not going any farther down that road than he already has. You've been through hell.
Everybody goes through some type of hell, don't they?
Arthur shrugs.
She was your age when she died, you know.
So young. And beautiful. And much loved by the people.
Yes, she was. He smiles. But no one really knew her. She could be very silly. She would sing to me all kinds of songs. I was particularly fond of her version of the Munch Bunch theme song.
I remember that show. I smile, then start singing. The Munch Bunch have run away. He grins, then does something completely unexpected. He sings too.
The Munch Bunch are here to stay.
I laugh, surprised at this side of him.
What's the next line? I forget.
Arthur goes on singing.
The Munch Bunch have found a home.
I pick it up from there. With a garden. We both laugh for a minute at ourselves. I blush at the silliness of it all. His face grows suddenly serious.
I don't remember much about her, but I do know she would have liked you.
Very much. Tears spring to my eyes for the second time this morning.
That's kind of you. It's true.
He reaches up and wipes the tear from my cheek with his thumb.
You have this tough exterior, but inside you're a person who cares very deeply about others.
How do you know? Maybe I'm granite through and through.
Because you just sang with me, and now you're crying.
Well, bugger, I gave the game away. I sniff a little and smile through my tears.
Since we're just two people right now, and people are prone to doing stupid things, I'm going to do something very stupid.
He glances at my lips again.
What? I'm going to kiss you.
That would be stupid.
And yet, unless you say no, I'm going to do it anyway.
I'm not saying no, so I must be as stupid as you.
Thank God for that.
He lowers his mouth over mine and kisses me. A soft, achingly beautiful kiss that warms me from my lips to my toes and back. I've never been kissed like this before. It's so gentle. So real, that I find myself melting into him. His hand slides over my cheek, and he tilts my head, giving him better access as his tongue finds mine. Our mouths move with the perfection of a champion ice skating pair, gliding and soaring together. My hand reaches for his chest, and I instinctively cover his heart with my fingers. Now that I've seen what he's been through, I've seen him in my mind's eye as a little lost boy with no mother to love him. I want to protect him and save him from anything that could hurt him, including myself. We stay like this for a long time, just kissing each other, nothing more. It's not sexual, but it's the most intimate, perfect moment of my life, and I can't remember a time when I felt so close to anyone. The world falls away, and we are no longer a prince and his harshest critic, but two flawed human beings needing to be understood. And for one brief and beautiful kiss, we give each other what we've both been missing for far too long. When it's over, I pull back, stunned at what just happened. I look at him, and he looks as shocked as I feel. Well, that was unexpected. Yes, it was. My breath is gone. We should be getting back. He stands and holds his hand out to me. I take it and let him help me up. Our fingers intertwine as we walk in silence, and there is something so natural about the feeling of his hand touching mine, something so pure and familiar. When we step over the bridge, I stop and turn to him. I'm so sorry about your mum. I reach up and touch his cheek. I promise I'll never tell anyone. Thank you. He leans down and presses his forehead to mine. I close my eyes and just feel him here. The weight he's been carrying for so many years makes my heart want to burst with pain. He moves his face back, then kisses my forehead. Thank you for being here with me. There's no place I'd rather be, I whisper, because my voice has been sucked away with sorrow, his sorrow. I can't hold back any longer. I wrap my arms around him and hold his body tightly to mine, and part of me hopes I can take his burden from him. Even just a bit. After a few more minutes of holding each other and more soft kisses, we break apart and start back toward the world again. I don't want to walk through those gates. Me either. His face is filled with regret. But we have to. So we do.
18. Will there be strippers? Arthur. The spell is broken the moment the gate closes behind us. Vincent's voice cuts through the warm spring air, an unwelcome intrusion on what was possibly the best dream I've ever had, which is odd, because there was no sex involved.
There you are, Prince Arthur. I've been looking for you everywhere.
You found me, I call back.
His Serene Highness is on his way home. His flight left an hour ago.
Vincent's bearing down quickly on us, and I fear soon the fresh scent of spring buds will be overcome by pungent cheese.
What time will he arrive home?
5:30, he says as he reaches us.
Yep, there it is, blue cheese.
Thank you. Sir, I think we should really have a plan for how to...
He glances at Tessa.
Manage the current situation.
I give him an easy smile. No need. I've got it covered.
Your Highness.
It's fine, really. I can handle it. I shoot him a warning look, and he takes the hint. Now, how are we set for this luncheon today?
Everything's ready. The guests will start arriving in 35 minutes. Princess Arabella has asked to take the lead on the speeches, and since this is her charity, I thought we'd let her.
That's fine. If she finds it too much, I can take over.
The head of the program has asked if Dexter will attend, considering the topic.
Oh, yes, he'll love it. I turn to Tessa. He does better at these types of things than I do. He gets any number of offers from women who want to take him home. She laughs, and the sound delights my ears yet again. You'll come today, yes?
I'd love to. I have a family obligation, so I'll have to duck out by 3 o'clock, though.
This news disappoints me slightly, and I'm surprised to find that I don't want her to go, even for a few hours.
I'll arrange for a car to take you. I'll see to that, sir, Vincent says. I'd better make sure Dexter has had a bath.
He hurries off, taking the walkie-talkie off his hip and calling back to the palace to give instructions. We wait for him to be a good distance from us before either of us speaks. I sigh, then say exactly what I know she wants to hear. Funny thing is, I mean it. It seems a shame that we have to go back to the way things were. Tessa looks up at me, her eyes full of emotion.
It does.
And yet, we must.
Agreed.
We walk for another moment, then Tessa approaches a subject I knew was coming.
Your father doesn't want me here, does he?
What makes you ask that? I'm deliberately being coy, while my mind races to come up with a suitable explanation. I can't very well say, my father's a total dickhead. He'll be absolutely awful to you, and since I like you very much, I can't bear the thought of it. But I should probably warn her. It's what any man who fancies a young woman would do. Wait. Do I fancy her? I stop and turn to her. He's not the easiest man to deal with, and I'm afraid he wasn't particularly thrilled when he learned of my plans as far as you're concerned.
Don't worry about me.
She shrugs, as though she doesn't care, but at the same time, her face pales slightly.
It's not like I'm his biggest fan, either.
I stare at her for a moment. The armor is back on, for which I am glad. She'll need it. Best-case scenario is that he'll be so busy with the upcoming anniversary celebrations that he won't have time to take much notice of you.
Ah, I see.
She starts back toward the palace, more slowly now than before. My stomach twists when I think about what I've just told her, and what we said and did a few minutes earlier. If there's one thing I've managed to avoid all my life, it's complicating things in any way. But Tessa Sharp seems to be the exception. She could very well use everything I've just said against me and make it all public knowledge, which is why I really must double my efforts to win her over. Tessa, will you be back in time for the sunset?
I don't think so. Why?
There's a lovely spot on the roof of the palace that overlooks the North Sea. I thought maybe we could share a bottle of wine and watch the sunset.
I'd love that. Maybe another time?
Her face says that this is all too good to be true, which of course it is. I suddenly feel like a total shit for doing this, but desperate times call for desperate measures, don't they? To be honest, when I think of sitting up there with her, sipping wine, I actually want to do it. It sounds rather wonderful. Well, isn't that a shock to the system? Just as we near the palace steps, she reaches out a hand and touches my arm, then stops.
Arthur, I promise what happened this morning will remain our secret. I have no reason to tell anyone of that.
Thank you. I search her face for the truth and see her sincerity. I appreciate that.
And as to your father, anything you may or may not have implied right now won't make good news anyway. My observations of him will be made directly and not from hearsay. I don't run a gossip rag.
I nod, and find myself absolutely riveted by her brilliant emerald eyes.
I'm more interested in doing the right thing than the smart thing. Maybe that makes me a fool, but I'd rather be thought of a fool than be someone with low morals.
I could never see you as either. I smile down at her beautiful face, then reach up and tuck a piece of hair behind her ear. And far too soon, we find ourselves back in the palace, surrounded by people I'd rather weren't there. The entire luncheon, I find myself either keeping note of the time or searching for Tessa among the patrons, making sure she seems happy. I had her seated at a table with some very nice animal activists, not the militant ones, but the give peace a chance ones. She seems to be getting on just fine, and the fact that I even care in the slightest about her comfort and happiness should be setting off alarm bells in my head. The truth is that I cannot, no matter what, stop thinking about her. Her smile,
a voice, the warmth and taste of a kiss. I can still smell her skin, even though I've showered and I'm in a freshly pressed suit, and I know it's my mind conjuring her scent. She looks up at me, and we lock eyes, smiling like fools at each other. Dexter is sitting on the floor with his head on her lap. Smart pig. He knows a quality girl when he finds one. Oh, fuck. This is bad, isn't it? I'm supposed to be impressing her, but instead, I think I might be falling for the one person on this planet who would like nothing more than to see my life destroyed. Very smooth, Arthur. Highly intelligent move on your part. I check my watch. She's going to leave in a few minutes, and I'm about to do something very stupid for the second time today. I take my phone out of my pocket and hold it under the table. Me. Any chance you want a plus one for this mysterious family obligation? I watch as she slides her phone off the table and discreetly reads my message. A slow smile spreads across her face, and she starts typing. Her.
Dexter?
I chuckle to myself, hoping no one notices. Me? No, the other surprisingly sweet pig in the family. Her.
LOL, you would hate it. It's a horribly loud birthday party for my very wild but adorable twin nephews, who are turning 6.
Me. Will there be strippers? I hear a laugh from here, and I feel like a comedy giant who could sell out Valcourt Hall, which is absolutely insane, because this is only some text flirting with someone whom I'm only text flirting with so I can get into her pants. And her good graces. Her.
Not if you don't count their 3-year-old brother who hates to wear clothes.
Me. He definitely does not count. Her.
All I can promise is that there will be cheap store-bought cake with sickeningly sweet icing and beer.
Me. You had me at sickeningly sweet icing. Her.
Meet me at the front doors in 15.
Me. I'll be there. She glances up at me with a little grin, and I find myself slightly excited. This is truly odd, because I've never been even remotely happy about attending a child's birthday party, even as a child, even when it was my own. But it's only because I'm really under the gun to win her over, before my father's shadow comes creeping over the castle. Not at all because of that delicious kissing business from earlier.
19. Toy shopping with the prince. Tessa. Well now, isn't life funny? 2 weeks ago I was on my way to my parents on the bus, mud on my pants, freezing cold and wishing I had a nice man with a little hybrid to drive me there. And now I'm sitting in the back of a stretch limo, fantastically warm, clean and dry, next to a prince who snogged me senseless this morning, while his driver, Ben, makes his way to my parents' neighborhood. I finally figured out what impossibly handsome means. It's when a man is so absolutely handsome that it's impossible not to stare. He's answering emails on his phone right now, so I can gaze at him all I want, and he won't see me. Just to give you a mental image, picture a crazy hot Viking sex god wearing jeans and a light blue button-down shirt that matches his eyes. And, as an extra bonus, his sleeves are rolled up 3/4, so I have a view of those muscles in his forearms. "You're being rather unproductive right now," he says without looking up. "Should I be working?" "That would be up to you, but it would be helpful if you weren't staring at me." He looks up and grins. "If you keep doing that, it'll mean I'll keep thinking about why you are staring, which will mean I'll take much longer than necessary to reply to this email, which means that it will take that much longer before I can give you my full attention." "Well, we can't have that." I pull out my phone and text Nikki. Me. "Guess where I am?" Her. "On a bus on your way to your parents' place?" Me. "In the back of a limo with Prince Arthur on the way to my parents." Her. "Scream! Are you serious? Stop by here on your way. Please, please, please." Me. "No way. You'll chain him up and keep him like that lady in that Stephen King book." Her. "Maybe, but I promise not to hobble him. Please, we could share. There's definitely enough of him to go around."
Me. How's your nose?
Her. Good point. Don't bring him today. Maybe in 2 weeks. I should be fine by then.
Me. That will also allow you suitable time to purchase chains and duct tape.
Her. Now you're talking. Wait a minute. He's going to your parents with you. For the twins' birthday party.
Me.
Yep.
His idea.
Her. He's really pulling out all the stops to win you over.
Me. You have no idea.
Her. What? Dish. Now.
Me.
Nothing. He's just very accommodating.
Her.
OMG! How accommodating!
Ben, can you stop here, please? At this store on the right? Arthur asks.
Yes, sir.
Me. Gotta run. Fill you in later.
Her. You better.
I toss my phone in my bag, suddenly feeling very guilty about both implying anything at all to Nikki and not telling her the whole truth. Being a woman is complicated sometimes. The car stops and I realize I don't know where we are. I look over at Arthur. What are we doing? I can't very well show up uninvited and empty-handed to a child's birthday party. I watch through the window as Ollie walks briskly into the store. I was just going to pop some cash in an envelope. He looks down his nose at me.
Really? What kind of horrible auntie are you?
The kind that brings jelly babies every time I see them.
Oh, so not so horrible after all, he says. Jelly babies are the world's best candy.
That they are. A slow smile stretches across my face. Maybe we have more in common than I think.
You have excellent taste, Ms. Sharp.
I'm surprised you'd say that, since I don't really like you at all.
Proves my point.
Ollie comes back out and nods. The driver opens the door for us. Arthur gestures toward the shop. Are you coming? We follow Ollie into the tiny, cramped toy shop. We're the only patrons, but if I had to guess, I'd say it'll fill up fast if we don't hurry. The limo with the royal flags parked out front is a dead giveaway. An older man stands behind the till, his eyes wide.
Your Highness.
He bows deeply. Good afternoon, Arthur says, his voice easy. We're in the market for some birthday gifts. 6-year-old, very wild twin boys.
Yes, sir.
The man hurries over to us. We've got just the thing. Came in last week. He walks us over to a display of neon razor scooters and gives us a quick sales pitch. Arthur looks at me. What do you think? Will this do? Only if you want to be their favourite person for the rest of their lives. Excellent. That will mean 2 down, 5 million to go. Arthur turns to the shopkeeper. We'll take 2. 1 gooey green and 1 blaster blue. The man takes 2 boxes and starts for the till. What should we get for the rest of the kids? He asks.
Why should we get them anything?
So they won't be jealous. In the next 20 minutes, we choose gifts for all my nieces and nephews, including the one who hasn't arrived yet. Arthur poses for several pictures with the man who owns the shop, as well as his wife and mother-in-law, who happen to be in the back room having tea. We also stop at the wine store next door and pick up 4 bottles of very nice wine, as well as a case of beer for my dad. When we're settled back into the limo, we sit quietly for a moment, our hands nearly touching. I look down at my fingers next to his against the leather seat. He has big, manly hands that dwarf mine and make me feel like a child. When I look up at him, he's also staring at our hands. He slowly slides his toward mine and links his pinky finger around mine. It's the slightest of gestures, but it sets off an explosion of happiness inside me. So, give me the rundown on who I'm about to meet.
Sure. My parents are Reuben and Evie. My father is a mechanic. My mother is a stay-at-home wife. I was going to say mum, but then I realized we've all grown up and moved out. She babysits the grandkids a lot, though.
So she's a stay-at-home grandmum? Exactly, I nod. I have four brothers. I'm the only girl. The eldest is Noah. He's a structural engineer and is married to Issa, and they have three kids, Tabitha, Poppy, and little Clarky. Watch out for Clarky. He's going through a bit of a head-butting phase, so keep your, scepter protected at all times. He nods. Got it. Reuben, Evie, Noah, Issa, Tabitha, Poppy, and Clarky, the ballbuster. I laugh, impressed with his ability to recall everyone's names. Okay, next in line is Lars, who is a professor of astrophysics at Valcourt Tech. A total dullard, then? Yes, especially when it comes to choosing women and raising kids. Oh dear. Wife is Nina, who is pregnant with what she hopes is a girl. They already have four boys, including our birthday twins, Jeffrey and Josh, as well as Knox and Stephen, named for my brother's biggest hero, Stephen Hawking. Then there's Bram, the dentist, who has never hired a hygienist he hasn't slept with. Ah, I see. Finally, there's Finn, who is finishing architecture school this spring. Huh. So all rather impressive career-wise. He gives me a thoughtful look for a second, then nods once. Now I understand. What? You grew up with four boys, all very smart, all probably loving to torture the only girl in the house. Underachieving mother, they likely thought you were also going to be a nice little housewife, and you've spent your entire life proving them wrong. I glare at him and slide my hand away, feeling irritation rise from my toes to my arched eyebrow. Wow, that was offensive on so many levels. Arthur looks taken aback. How so? First of all, calling my mother an underachiever for dedicating her life to her family. You've just insulted, like, half of the women on the planet. He opens his mouth, but I cut him off. Second, I don't appreciate the little pop psychology assessment. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to offend. I'm just trying to figure you out. The way he says it douses almost all of the flames of anger in me, but I keep my chin out all the same. Well, you did offend. I wish I hadn't, because you were smiling before, and now you're not. He lifts his hand and touches my bottom lip with his thumb. It's quite a loss for me, because I've become rather attached to your smile in a very short period of time. Well, when he puts it that way. I suppose your heart was in the right place. Forgiven? Forgiven. I give him a little grin. Plus, this gives me the upper hand again in a very big way. He narrows his eyes playfully. Because I've admitted to being a Tessa smile addict? Because if I tweet your comment about stay-at-home mums being underachievers, you're totally fucked. Oh, bonics, you're right. I narrow my eyes and try for my most ominous look. You're mine now, Your Highness. He licks his lips. What are you going to do with me, Ms. Sharp? The car stops. I look out the window to see my parents' house to my right. For now, force you to spend time with my family. I'm more interested in what you'll do to me after the party. This time, as I get ready to go inside, it's with a nervous excitement that I haven't felt since, well, maybe ever.
20. Cheat cake and royal commemorative knick-knacks. Arthur. Your Highness, please wait here so I can run a quick security assessment of the premises. Ollie stands next to the door as Tessa gets out. Why is he talking? I'm trying to enjoy her very fine arse from this vantage point. No need, Ollie. I'm sure it's safe, I say, following that fine arse out of the limo. I'm afraid I cannot allow you to go in until we know for certain.
Oh, but it's my parents' house, Tessa says. Who would be waiting to assassinate the prince? No one even knows we're coming.
Tough girl. Have I mentioned that I'm really starting to like her? Ollie ignores her. With all due respect, Your Highness, Miss Sharp here isn't exactly a friendly. There's a good chance there's more like her inside. I grit my teeth and talk through them. Really not necessary, Ollie. Tessa touches my arm.
It's all right. I understand. I'll go in with him.
Sorry, Tessa, I say, searching her eyes to see if she's offended. She smiles.
It's fine, really. The kids will think this is a hoot.
I wait beside the car, feeling like a complete idiot, as I watch her jog up the front steps. She opens a door, then she and Ollie disappear inside. I stand and take in the sight of a perfectly normal street, lined with normal houses that are filled with normal families who have normal struggles. How magnificent it must be to be unknown. I see curious onlookers hold back front room curtains across the street. I give them a small smile and a wave. Stunned smiles and waves are my reward before the front door to the Sharp home opens and a stream of children come pouring out like milk from a spilled jug. They scream as they head for the limo. Grown-ups follow them, barreling down the steps in my direction. Fuck me. This is a little much.
It's a real limo.
I told you it was, you idiot.
There he is. It's Arthur.
Prince Arthur, hello.
Can we get a ride?
No, you can't ask for a ride, you doughhead. He's a prince. He's not going to let your grubby bum in his limo.
Tabitha, that's not nice.
He smells like farts. We can't have him smelling up the prince's car like farts.
I burst out laughing as mayhem ensues right out on the sidewalk. I search the crowd for Tessa, only to spot her on the top step, wincing. I wave and mouth, "It's all right." She smiles as the children introduce themselves to me, and I shake their sticky little hands, one at a time, memorizing their names as I go. Josh, who has especially hot, gooey fingers, pipes up so he can be heard over the other children.
"Can we go for a ride in your car, Your Majesty?"
"Oh, you mustn't call me Your Majesty. That title is reserved for the reigning monarch." Josh tilts his head, looking very confused. "Only my dad is called Your Majesty. Call me Arthur, okay?"
"Okay,"
he says impatiently.
"Can we go for a ride, Arthur?"
"If it's okay with your pair..." Before I can get the words out, the back door of the limo is swung open and all the kids pile in, followed by three men, whom I assume are Tessa's brothers. One of them calls out,
"That's it. No one else can fit back here."
As the door closes, I hear one of the kids shout,
"Once around the park, Jeeves."
A burst of laughter comes from inside. Tessa is standing next to me now, her hand on her forehead.
"I'm so sorry about that. Poor Ben."
"Quite all right. The privacy glass is soundproof."
"Still..."
She shakes her head.
"You'd think they'd never met a prince before."
"Oh, I'm nothing. It's the limo that's the real star of the show." We are approached by the leftover adults. I smile at the older couple before me. "You must be Tessa's parents. Evie and Reuben, right?" I give them a small bow and shake Reuben's hand.
"Wonderful to meet you both."
Kissing Evie on her cheeks, I continue,
"You must be very proud of Tessa. Few people manage to keep me on my toes the way she has done."
Evie blushes deeply, and they both beam at me.
"Yes, she's a real pistol, this one."
I move along to a younger, rather round-looking woman, whom I'm afraid might pee her pants, she's so excited. "Ah, Nina, right? There's nothing as lovely as woman with child. The perfect symbol of hope." I put both hands on her belly and lower my head a little.
"Hello in there. Come out as soon as we can meet you."
Ladies love that. Except, when I look up at her face, the happy mummy is not happy at all. She looks rather pissed off. Now that I think about it, her belly doesn't have that hard quality that most pregnant bellies do. It's squishy. Oh, shit. Wrong sister-in-law. If looks could kill, she'd be tried for treason.
"I'm not pregnant. And I'm not Nina. I'm Issa."
Well, fuck me. There's no coming back from that, is there? Issa.
I stifle an uncomfortable laugh and pull my hands away. I'm not wearing my contacts today, so my depth perception is very much off.
That didn't even make sense, did it? Fuckity fuck.
She glares at me and points to the woman standing behind her, who is trying very hard not to laugh.
She's Nina.
Right, sorry. Fuck. Hello, Nina.
Let's go inside, shall we?
Tessa says. Oh, yes. Dear God. Let's go inside, where I pray they will serve a lot of booze. The next hour of the party hums along without a hitch. I stand around in the kitchen with Tessa's brothers and father while we drink beer and try to stay out of the way of sugared-up children. The ladies of the family, other than Issa, who can hold a grudge with the best of them, giggle and grin at me, offering me mini sausage rolls and asking me question after question about life in the palace. It's busy, but at times it can be very quiet. Who does my sister's hair? A hairdresser. Do I really have my own crown? Yes, but I take it off when I shower or go to bed. Tessa smiles at me from across the room, and every once in a while mouths an apology to me. God, she's pretty. When we sit down to dinner, her brother Bram pipes up.
So, Tess, are you and His Highness an item now or what?
Not at all. He was just kind enough to join us for the party.
Really? Because it wouldn't be the first time Tess has overshot the mark with who she thinks will fancy her.
Shut up, Bram,
she says quietly, her eyes firing daggers at him. He has a sip of beer.
Yeah, she once fell for a...
Bram, that's enough.
Evie's voice puts the sharp in sharp. I sit up straight in my chair in response.
Arthur, I have to say I'm shocked that you're here.
This comes from the tall, skinny one called Lars.
After everything Tess has written about you, I'd think you'd hate her.
Far from it. If a man can't handle a little criticism, he's not much of a man, is he? I say, slicing into the turkey with my knife and popping a forkful in my mouth.
I wouldn't expect you'd pay much attention to anything she'd say anyway. Am I right?
Bram asks. What a little prick.
Why not? She's not exactly the sharpest tool in the Sharp family.
They all start snickering. My head snaps back, and I set my fork and knife down. On the contrary, Tessa's one of the most brilliant people I've met. And I've met some of the top engineers at NASA.
You must be talking about some other Tessa,
Finn laughs.
This one's a disgraced journalist who got fired and ended up reviewing camera equipment and taking the piss out of the king for a living. Doesn't take a Lars over here to do that.
I stare him down for a moment, trying to regain my composure before I jump across the table and punch him in his smug face. If you really don't know how intelligent and insightful she is, it would seem to me that you've never bothered to listen to a word she said or read a sentence of her writing. Quite frankly, that says a lot more about your own intellect than hers. Tessa's brilliant, and she's self-made, unlike me. I have nothing but the highest regard for her. I glance over at her and see that Tessa is blinking back tears. She gets up and excuses herself quietly. I'm just about to get up and go after her when her mother stands. Evie shakes her head at her sons.
Can't we just have one bloody nice family dinner with the prince, without you boys acting like donkeys?
She gets up and follows Tessa out of the room.
Grandmum just swore. Why did she say we're acting like donkeys?
She didn't. She was talking about her dads.
Can we open our presents now?
21. Speaking of asses. Tessa. Well, that was... something, Arthur says as soon as the limo pulls away. In hindsight, it was probably not such a good idea to bring you. I cringe, thinking of the many lowlights of the party. I disagree. That's the best time I've had in years. The look of pure amusement on his face is contagious, and I find myself grinning back at him. My favourite part was when you were talking to Issa's stomach. He bursts out laughing and covers his face with one hand. Why did I do that? I mean, seriously, with my hands on her belly and everything. We laugh until tears are streaming down our faces. When I recover a little, I say, "Hello in there. Come out soon so we can see you." He shakes his head. "That was bloody awful, wasn't it? Issa will never forgive you." "Are you quite sure? I thought the whole thing seemed to roll right off her back," he says, tongue in cheek. "You may have lost one vote there. Too bad, because it was a guarantee." "Shit. If only the kids could vote, they'd save my sorry ass." He grins. "I really did enjoy the part when they were opening our presents. That was genuinely fun." "Our presents?" That has a nice yet terrifying ring. "Your presents, you mean. And it was fun. It's my favourite part of being an aunt," I say. "I can see why. It was much better than the bit when Lars connected his phone to the telly so he could show everyone the shock jogger video." I slap my hand to my face. "Ugh. That is never going away, is it?" Arthur tries not to laugh. "I'd say it's unlikely, since the auto-tune the news guys came out of retirement in your honour. I can't believe that you've already got more hits than the double rainbow guy. Rather impressive, if you think about it." I purse my lips together and stare up at him from under my eyebrows. "Oh, it's not so bad. You look quite fetching in just your sports bra and those tight running pants. Bouncy, yet firm." Mental note, make sure to jog around the palace grounds every morning. I smile up at him and glide my index finger down the centre of his face. "I'm drunk." "Me too," he grins. "Isn't it wonderful?" "Yes, and quite necessary when attending a birthday party for 6-year-olds. "Agreed." I lean my head on his shoulder again, feeling warm and safe, and just the right amount of tipsy. "The kids adored you. And my parents did, too. I really like them, the kids especially. They're hilarious. Your parents were very welcoming, but they really don't give you enough credit, so they lose points for that." He lazily runs his fingers down my arm, and I feel the most delicious chills. "Your brothers are asses, though, the lot of them, even the rocket scientist." "Right?" I sit up and look at him. "Finally, somebody sees it." "I could tell immediately." His face grows serious. "Speaking of arses, my father will be home when we get there." My eyes grow wide at his statement. "I shouldn't have said that. Too much beer. Can you please forget the last 3 seconds? "Yes, of course." "Thank you." "You're very kind for a cruel wench of a blogger." "Aw, you're so sweet." Arthur laughs, and I totally love that he gets me. Then his eyebrows knit together, and he stares at me for a long moment. Just when I start thinking he might kiss me, he clears his throat. "About my father, things don't exactly have the same feel around the house when he's home. You'll find it considerably more formal. Some have described it as tense, even." Uh-oh. Even my tipsy brain is picking up on the fact that we're heading into troubled waters. I suddenly feel a little more sober. "Don't worry about me, I can handle it." "You're not as tough as you pretend to be. I saw you tear up when your brothers were embarrassing you at dinner." I glance out the window for a second, watching the blur of lights pass by. "I didn't tear up because they were being nasty. I teared up because you were being so nice." "Oh, I see." I'm scared to look at him, but I do it anyway. I'm used to them being awful to me, but having someone stand up for me was unexpected. "So I'll be fine as long as your father isn't overly kind." "He won't be, which is what worries me." "Don't worry. It's not like I expected a warm reception from any of you. You should have a warm reception everywhere you go. When I am king, I'll make it a law.